Accession number 12713, Mr. Tony Temple, Reel 17.
Mr. Temple, Reel 17. You were on 6 weeks' leave, Mr. Temple. What happened after the leave?
Well, I had applied to the Office of IC Records for a further extension of leave because I'd still had a fair amount to do with regards to seeing family, because my family was split up all over the country. I'd seen the majority of them, but I hadn't seen a lot of the number I wanted to see. And I wrote to Records asking if I could have the leave extended. They wrote back, understanding the situation. I said, well, unfortunately, you've been instructed to report to the Shrewsbury Salop Infirmary, I think they call it. Shrewsbury Infirmary, or the Shropshire Infirmary, it's in Shrewsbury. And so that was it. After the leave had terminated, I went to Shrewsbury for, I was in there, let me see, about 3 or 4 weeks, I think it was, in the main ward.
What were they doing to you in there?
Just, again, foods, had these special foods, in order to build up my system what it used to be. Including, funnily enough, a bottle of Guinness, a small bottle of Guinness every day to help build me up again. I was still in a shocking state. Whilst I'd been on leave, I hadn't done much drinking at all, because I couldn't. It was just one of those things. It was much was the same as happened when I went to the hospital. They kept me there for about 3 or 4 weeks, and it was during this time I was in there that the headquarters, based in Shrewsbury, was the Welsh Border Sub-District. And unbeknownst to me, that was my old commanding officer, who was the Brigadier, Colonel Lysite Griffin. He commanded us when we were in North China. In fact, he brought us to the Middle East. And the Middle East headquarters found a job for him at GHQ. And this was, I met up with him again, but I didn't meet up with him then at the hospital. I met up with two other fellas, a bloke called Donoghue, who was then a captain, who worked his way up through the ranks. Nice fella. Always was a nice fella. You know, nothing ever disturbed him. They were given the instructions to report, because we had a special ward. They were all soldiers in this ward, or servicemen, I should say. And they had instructions that they had to visit us. One officer had to visit at least once a week during that period that we were there. And the first week, Donoghue came, and we had a bit chat. He found out who it was. Oh, yes, I'll have a chat with the colonel about you. Now, the following week, he comes to the reunion regularly. He was a major. He finished up a major. Hudson, Fred Hudson. He came up the following week, and we had a good chat. Donoghue had apparently told him that there was one of our buds in there. We had to go and see him. I spoke nearly the whole of the time to him, his visiting period, about an hour, just to make sure that everything was all right, you know, and we stood chatting for quite a long time. And then it was organised that I would, when I left the hospital, or left the hospital command, I would, instead of going, I would have to go through another selection board, apparently they have these selection boards, I had to go down Wharton and the Wood, but jumping the story, but they'd arranged, through the colonel, that I was to be posted at that headquarters. As soon as I terminated all my treatment. So I left the hospital and went into a convalescence for about 3 weeks. And there was a small house in Ford, just outside Shrewsbury. It was the house of an ex-major who converted part of his house into a convalescent wards for soldiers requiring convalescence. And I was there for about 3 weeks. So in all intents and purposes, I'd done more or less a 6 week on leave, 6 weeks in hospital. And from there, I was sent down to Wharton under Wood, just outside Oxford, for rehabilitation, where you were coming back. And by this time, the medical officers determined that I was fit enough to go for rehabilitation centre. That's 6 weeks at home and the 6 weeks in the hospital, they'd done wonders for me. But of course, being young, you tend to sort off much quicker. We'd done the usual things there, tests for whichever unit, because you weren't guaranteed to go back to your own unit. They were going to have to do all sorts of tests. I mean, some guys didn't need to go back to the unit. Some of them were just discharged. Nervous wrecks for some of them, you know, obviously. They couldn't help it. Other fellas were changed completely from through the tests that they'd done. A mate of mine from the DR, Dave Milligan, for instance, he finished up in the engineers. And it was through these tests that they got, the majority of blokes just went to different regiments. So I stuck with mine.
What kind of tests were they?
Well, the normal test that you have on a selection board of any sort. When you go to the army, during the instruction days in the army, instructor's days, you would go to a personnel officer and he would give you various tests to do, various shapes to put into blocks and things like that. The simpler things, going on to the more complicated, then from the, you know, going on to all the mechanical stuff, which does the heaviest work, one pulley, two pulleys, three, which is the easiest one to pull, which does the heaviest work, and so forth. That's the sort of test that you were put through. As well as physical tests, we were doing lots of PT, lots of road work on the outside, 100-yard sprints and athletics. You know, you're doing that the whole time until they said, right, oh, this is testing time. I think this was in the last week that we were there for about 3 weeks. This is the testing time. We've got to put you through some tests. We've got to do the 100 yards in under a certain time. Wasn't a fabulous time. If you'd done it under, say, I suppose, 15 seconds or 20 seconds, that was good enough, you know, so long as you could run the 100 yards reasonably well. 5 mile march, again, that was, there was one special do. One of the instructors had wanted to say, well, I want to do this march because he wants to try to break some sort of record. And we said, well, fair enough, don't take any notice of me, but if you fancy keeping up, try it. Well, he'd done it in 37 minutes. I wasn't far behind him at 43, which wasn't too bad. He had done all sorts of physical tests. And when it finally came to the selection, before we actually dispatched to the various regiments, we were going or back to your own regiment, I went in front of the selection officer. He said, you've already been spoken for. You know, go back to Welsh Border Sub-District Headquarters, under Colonel Inside Griffin. I said, great stuff, because I was only about 15 miles from home. And that was great stuff, and I went down there as a post. He created a position for me, I would think, because the bloke I was working with, who was doing post at the time, he said, well, only one used to work here, but now he said that there's two of us. So he was going to shortly beat him up. They were going to have to replace him, and I think he called us on early just to get the hang of the situation. And I stayed there until the headquarters was closed, and we got on very well with the colonel and Fred Hudson, Bill Donoghue. Then the headquarters was going to close, and the colonel called me into his office, brigadier as he was then, called me into his office. He said, well, what are you going to do from here? I said, I don't know. Go back to the regiment, I suppose. He says, no. He said, we don't want it. You've done your stint. We don't want to do any more. I'll think of something. He said, had been doing some work for him in the billets where he had in the town. It was in the town, cleaning his sand belt, his boots, you know, fetching him up the scratch and that. DLI standard. And he says, well, look, he says, I'll entitle you a batman, and if I can take... would you be interested if I was posted elsewhere and going with you? I said, certainly, no problem at all. Because by that time, I'd lost the stripe, because if he hadn't been reported to an active unit for some time, that was all the main way, so I was back to private soldier. And he said, well, there's only one obstacle, and I said, I've got to go for a medical. He said, if I keep my position, it'll be all right, but if I get the bowler hat, well, we'll have to think again. Well, he got his bowler hat, unfortunately. He wasn't medically fit. So he fixed me up to go to a friend of his in Lichfield who was running the GOC, General Service Depot, bringing in recruits from civilian life into the depot for training for, well, the call-up was still on at that particular time. He said, well, you were going to post you there as a Lance Corporal. That was where I got my stripe back. And we'll take it from there. So I settled in Lichfield, Whittington Barracks, and I was there... I don't know, I suppose about 12 months, 15 months before that place closed. And I was sent to...
What date was this?
I think that was 45 Christmas, I think, because it extended into the new year, because I remember we left there around about the 46 to go to... I was posted to Bransmouth. The 68th PTC, because they were then reorganising the training depots, primary training centres as we were called, into various regiments, and I went back to the regimental, which is our 68th, so they called it 68th PTC, and we, of course, were the 68th of foot. And I was there that I got my second stripe, and the company commander was Topper Brown, again, chap I'd served with in China. So we got on fairly well there, instructing youngsters coming into the army. And then after a period of about 18 months, that place closed. And I was dispatched then to Aldershot under the Royal Ordnance Corps. They were forming, again, the hierarchy had changed the minds again, and they were going to have, each regiment was going to have its own primary training centre. But instead of being shipped to other parts, the personnel selection was carried out when they were recruited, which at the primary training end was carried out when we had them in training. But they're going to do that before then. We're going to, when they were recruited, at a recruiting centre, and then sent to the regiments that they were selected for. And this is where we went to the Ordnance Corps. There was me, John Gibson, and Peter West. There's three of us went down. And this was a new regiment that they were forming. Again, it was for primary training, plus the trade training which they were in. I think it was the second, was it the second battalion? Second training battalion, Royal Ordnance Corps. And well, this is primary, that's all we were doing, just training, instructing these fellas. Weapons, fieldcraft, which every soldier goes through, and then of course their own instructors were taking on their own trades, whatever the trades happened to be. And this lasted until I retired from the army. I was completing my term of service.
How did you take to the changing routine of the forces when you come out of prison camp, and of course all the time that you've been a very active soldier, into this training, this various types of jobs that you had?
Well, the clerical job I got at the Welsh Border Subdistrict Headquarters was tolerable. It wasn't a job that I liked or even wanted to do, but I was near home, 15 miles from home. I'd get home foremost every night if I wanted to. But never, maybe once a week, and at the weekends I certainly used to go home. But I didn't take to it because I've always been an outdoor type, and I was happy there, quite settled, in the respect that it didn't bother me doing it. Although it was strange to me, new to me, it's something I wasn't used to. I settled down into it for the period that the headquarters was opened. And then when I was posted to Lichfield, to the General Service Depot, I didn't like the idea of instructing. Although we'd gone through a lot of training through peacetime and wartime, I hadn't done a lot of training on fieldcraft or weapons. I'd done any amount of drill training, because that I was doing at school in any case. But training on weapons is something I had to get used to. And of course, they used to form these, what they called carders, where the junior NCOs used to go on there to be taught the characteristics of any instructor, what an instructor should be, how he should be approaching the subject of instruction, no matter what the subject was, how the general, they were teaching you how to be an instructor, natural fact. Well, we got through that, but I still didn't take to it for all that. So I asked for an interview with the colonel, and he said, well, look, he said, Colonel, I said, Griffin was a great friend of mine. He said, don't think that you're going to get away from here by packing in your rank, which I threatened to pack up in rank. He said, I'll put you on toilets. He said, I've got the full story from the colonel before he left. He said, so you might as well stick with what you've got. And it was shortly after that we heard that we were going to be disbanded and we were going to go north, 68 PT. I said, near home. I was still a member of the DLI. And it wasn't until we got down to Aldershot with the Ordnance Corps that they were trying to bribe me to stay on, because I would come towards the end of my service, trying to stay on. We'll make you sergeant, we'll make you staff sergeant. Stop on with us. I said, no, I want to get out. But generally speaking, it was, I didn't, even when I was down at Bransworth, again, it was one of those things what you went doing, but my heart wasn't in it. I'd never done any instructing at all. I'd always, as Topper Brown says, well, you've turned out to be a good instructor, just carry on. And when we went down to Aldershot, again, it was one of those things, I wanted to come out and come back with the regiment. And Pete Raisin, the bloke that we went with, and Peter West, to say, well, look, just hang fire. You've done your stint, man. Just be happy with it, what you've got here. And I just seemed to settle down away in Aldershot.
Had you been promoted?
Yes. They'd given me a little job of land sergeant when I was down there in charge of a platoon. You were in charge of a platoon in the sense for only for... you slept in the same quarters as them. Only you were in a bunk at the end of the bunk, at the end of the barrack. That little bunk was yours. Nobody, there's only God was allowed to enter that. I settled down to it after that. But they still want me to transfer to the ordnance corner, and I wouldn't do it. This is when the staff sergeant, all that, came up. And they charged me with the company. He nerded me into the office a couple of times, big fella from Scots Guards. He wanted me to transfer or not. So I put it to him. I says, well, look, I'll transfer to the Ordnance Corps if you'll transfer to the Ordnance Corps. Oh, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm Scots Guards. I said, no, I'm Durham Light Infantry, and I'm staying. And that was the end of it. I stayed at Acting Land Sergeant. I never really got the promotion as a DLI sergeant, so I can't go to the DLI sergeant's functions at the annual meet, the annual reunion. And I had a bit of a problem when my time came up. We were due to be demobbed, I think it was on the 7th of September, 48. I had a long way to go because I'd met this girl when I was instructing in Durham, and I was virtually no home, because when I was in Shrewsbury, the old lady had died. Well, she was the only one at home, you know, so virtually I had no home to go back to. And Betty is, that's the one I was courting at that time, my wife. She said, well, just come up and live with us. We'll fix it up with Mum and Dad, and you can come up and live with them. So I said, well, that's fair enough. And this guy in the orderly office, I went to the orderly office, I'll pick up my documents, because the sergeant major sent us over. She said, oh, you might as well get away. You've got a long way to go. It might take a while to get through. And we had to go to Woking, which was funny, just up the road, wasn't too far away. And I went to the order room, they hadn't the documents ready yet. They hadn't a clue that was supposed to be going out. So I said, well, you'll call back in half an hour. So one of them said, no, you better come back sometime this afternoon or tomorrow. I said, no way. I said, I'm going out today, supposing I go out on my own. And I went back to see Jock, and I told him what the position was. He took me in front of the company commander, told him what the position was. And they both went over the order room. And they phoned up back to the company, and I was over and out within an hour. He was just one of these awkward blokes that just wouldn't do anything, you know.
Did you find a number of these in the peacetime army, post-war army?
I don't know what it was. You see, he was Ordnance Corps. Nearly all the staff were Ordnance Corps. Now, I think they had a sort of resentment against the infantry blokes like us, as instructors. I suppose they felt that they had their own supply, which they probably did get after a while, through blokes from the infantry transferring over. But you weren't the one of them. So he would keep you on as long as he could, hanging on a hook. And I think Jock, when I went to tell him about it, he realised and told the company commander, who was a major, I can't remember his name, I didn't want to remember his name, but he was Ordnance Corps, but Jock may have pushed it through for me to get away. And I was dispatched to Woking within the hour with full documents. The only hold up on the documentation was that the company commander had written on my discharge book a character, which was required by every soldier that was retired on his document papers. And the commanding officer read it before, when he went to the order room, he read it. And he phoned the company commander. I found this afterwards through Jock, talking to Jock. Apparently, the commanding officer had said, you mustn't have looked at this man's record. He said, it goes back nearly 13 years. He made no mention. He's never been in any trouble. I'm sending this back and I want an excellent one put in. And obviously, the commanding officer must have gone through my record at some point, which should have been done. It must have been done prior to me going, prior to the 7th of September, the day I was supposed to go. But he had to change it. He made him change it that day. And the character was exemplary. That's what that was what the top was. And then he started writing this little bit of stuff there. I suppose the colonel told him what the score was. Told him how to write it out and what to write it out. But anyway, I went to Woking to be discharged, where you get your documentation, your civilian clothes, your bowler hat, as the colonel said.
What date was this?
This was on the 7th of September. 1948. Reception there was really good. But this was at a period when the demob centres were being cut down to size, cut in volume, I should say. The size was about the same, but the numbers were being cut down because as the bulk of the troops had gone out in 45, 46, and gradually it was diminishing to 47 and 48, there was very few going out. So they had these centres just up and down the country, and I happened to be near one at Woking. The normal principle when they set up a lot of these was to post a soldier to the one nearest his home and send him through that one so he didn't have far to go. But after a while, as I said, there wasn't so many passing through these centres, so they decided to just centralise them in various places over the country. And I had to go through this one at Woking. The documentation was fairly efficient, fairly good. It'd been out some years, so there should have been. But it always seemed to be something lacking. Sizes and so forth of the civilian clothes, which possibly I thought that they had no experience, but then they'd been doing it for about 4 years. They should have had some idea what sort of sizes to get in. And at the finish, I finished up with a grey pinstrip suit, which was supposed to be officer material. It was the only one that would go anywhere near me. Because in those days, I'd never put in much weight on the prisoner war camp. It was like a rake. And I don't suppose I went any more than about 9.5 stone. And I was fit, very fit.
So what did you get? You got a suit?
I got a suit, shoes, socks, shirts, hat, which I never wore. Give it to the old man when I got home. Well, Betty's father, give it to him. A box to put all your gear in, the usual documentation of discharge papers, Russian books to cover. I got a 4 months, 4.5 months leave, because the service I'd done abroad had accumulated for me demob leave, and I didn't get the usual span which everybody else was getting. I got that plus the amount of time, which was 7.5 years at that time. And so I got 4.5 months leave on full pay, Russian books, clothing coupons, even if we used to get it. And away I went. I found basically that I spent about 2 weeks on leave, and I think it was at that period when Betty hadn't travelled very much out of her own, you know, county, because there was not much travelling at all. And I took it out, and my sister had a time about doing this, that, and the other. But I got bored with it, honey. There was the sameness every day. I got bored with it. And Betty knew this girl that she was working with. Her father was the traffic manager of the Northern General Transport Company at Chesley Street. And he fixed me up with a job. And I stuck that for about a couple of months. I realised it wasn't for me. And I told myself, as soon as I get something else, I'll be leaving. And when I went home, I bumped into my brother, who in the meantime had been demobbed around about the 1945-46 period. And he had joined the fire brigade, and he said, this is what you should do. He said, because it fits in exactly what you've been doing for the past 13 years. It's almost identical. And he said, you'll find out all the blokes who are in the fire brigade are in the same mind as you. So when I got back home, I followed his example, applied to the county fire brigade, done the tests, done the written examination, and I left that the General Transport Company. I just left the job in February. And I joined the fire brigade, I think it was in February 14th, 1949. And that concludes my history.
Looking back on the years that you were in the army, have you an outstanding officer or officers that you can recall that you were pleased to be serving with?
Yes, I think so, for various reasons. There'd probably be one or two, Harry. The first one, who was a regular officer, he was with the battalion when we were in Blacktown. And again, he was the adjutant of the battalion when we went abroad. Indeed, for the longer the time we were abroad. And it wasn't, don't think it was until we went to the Middle East, when after war was declared, that he really came into his own. He was a good administrator, but he was also a bloody good soldier, which he proved after we'd landed, when the war started with Italy. And that was Fox Davies. He was then promoted major and given the command of a company, I think it was D Company, which in those days was the trouble company. Any company that was had any troublemakers were always sent to D. But mind, there were good guys to be in tight corner with. And that was the company he wanted and the company he got. And the blokes worshipped him. Really the worst. He wasn't a soft touch, don't get me wrong. No means. He was a hard man, but all his men had to be as hard as... He wanted to be as hard as his men had to be as hard as him. And they knew what they were doing. But he was so far as warfare was concerned, he was the ultimate, in my opinion. Of all the officers I've met, he was the man, Fox Davis, Major Fox Davis.
What happened to him?
He was killed, unfortunately. These good guys were always going down, aren't they? The other bloke was probably more on the, I was going to say timid, he couldn't say anybody was timid, not one of the Durhams. What more of a likeable chap was Colonel Isaac Griffin. He seemed to stand the battalion on its nose when he first came out to us in Tin Sin. I don't know whether I've related it in this book at all. We used to do about 12 or 15 separate guards for different places throughout the British concession. And he joined us. I think we must have been about 2 or 3 months in our term of there. And this morning he would have to visit with the adjutant and the RSM, who used to take the guard mountain, and see what the score was. And he noticed that all the lads had the big packs on, the haversacks at the side, the water bottles aside, the pouches. And he went to the first one when the adjutant finished inspecting. He started talking to him, and the RSM was with him. He said, "What have you got in your pack on your mark?" He said, "An overcoat." He said, "Well, how do you get this pack so square like this?" Because it was perfectly symmetrical, beautiful. And he said, "We've got a box inside, and the great coat goes in the box, and it's got to be like that. That's the way we mount guards." He said, "So you take it off, take your pack off." So I helped him off his pack, and he took the bits and looked at it. He said, "What about your haversack?" The haversack was the same. You had to dump the water bottles on this side. And you're in putties, and the old-fashioned army putties, you know, with the turnovers, had them on. "Oh, yeah," I said. "Are you all like this, yeah? What do you do when you go to the guard room?" "Well, we take these off, and there's somebody's got to go and collect old blankets and fetch them all, because we're there on 24 hours, or 40, whichever was arranged, whichever far that to go." And he altered all that. He was the sort of bloke who was recognised that the British soldier was no bloody fool. That whilst he was a bit of a mourner at times, but the story is a good soldier is always mourning about something or other, but the hierarchy had to keep him busy doing something. He was quite happy. And I think he realised it's about time that some of this sort of stuff was sent back. And he ordered immediately in the future all guard what we've done in slacks, dress trousers, the slacks, tunic, and belt and bayonet, rifle, full stop. And that was it. All the other stuff, as he said, by the guard room orderly, he would go and collect all the packs and have a section there. He said, "Take what you like in there." He said, "But on parade," he said, "that's all they're going to be dressed in." And that was it. He is the sort of guy who changed us. He was also a great lover of sport. And he always used to have teams amongst various companies. His rats and mice, as he called them. He would change them frequently. Though he used to play five-a-side hockey. He was not a football fan, but he was a good hockey fan. He was never a cricketer, but he favoured this seven-a-side hockey. And his rats and mice used to play regularly. And he always used to present them with little bits of prizes and wristwatches and the winners in their showboat, you know. But he was the guy who really stood the battalion up on its nose. Mind, having said that, he also warned them. He said, "You blow your balloons up." He said, "When you come in front of me, I can burst those balloons, and by God, I will." They knew him. That he would be a hard man if he wasn't a great believer in detention. When he felt it was necessary, he would send a bloke away for a week and say, "Right, well, you deserve this, you're going." And he'd send him away for detention for seven days, 48 hours, whatever he thought he deserved. But he wasn't a man who did it for purely simply because he had the authority to do it. So consequently, the blokes liked this Colonel Isaac Griffin. He was another, well, as I say, one of these blokes that you infrequently come across in the army. So him and Fox Davis, to me, I could add Hugh Vaux, one of the Vauxes, belonged to the Vauxes Brewery in North China. He was my company commander. We used to call him Daddy Vaux. He used to look after the interests of the men a lot. But I wouldn't say he was a bit of a soft side. Very intelligent bloke, and he was again in charge of us when we done this night attack in Tobruk. He was our company commander then. So he hadn't progressed much from being a company commander in Tin Sin to a company commander in the siege of Tobruk in 1942. So he hadn't progressed very much, which I think left a lot to be desired so far as the men were thinking, that he's not the bright spark that he's supposed to be, but he was. He was a nice fella. Possibly he was too nice, and this is possibly what held him back, but he was a gentleman.
Are there any officers that are in your mind that you didn't respect, you had difficulty relating to?
That one at Tobruk, I had no time for him at all. When an officer asks a private soldier where to go back his own lines from his enemy lines, that to me spells everything. You know, Captain Stafford, I'm a member of the DLI. I'm ashamed of the fact that he is a member of the DLI. But I don't think he was originally. I think he was posted to us. And I don't think he lasted long after that. I think he went.